This is Lisa Miller & Associates Florida Insurance Roundup, your podcast on the people, issues, and regulations shaping Florida's insurance market. Now, here's Lisa Miller.
Welcome, friends. As we record this podcast, the Florida Legislature just completed the 60-day regular legislative session. I saw many of you in the halls and was grateful for your time and talent as we worked diligently to help good public policy in the property insurance market. It was a session that was light on a number of bills directly impacting our market, but those that did pass will change the landscape of property insurance regulation and the broader consumer marketplace. There were other bills that will impact Florida's environmental landscape, including what it will do, these bills do to the economy, real estate, anything that drives our economy, what we call the state's cash cows, if you will. We all know the connection between property insurance and a vibrant real estate market, and we'll talk all about this on today's podcast. We have two distinguished guests joining us today, Florida Representative Tom Fabrizio. He's a Republican from Miami Lakes. Representative Fabrizio sits on the House Insurance and Banking Subcommittee and chairs the House Ethics, Elections, and Open Government Subcommittee. And he's a practicing lawyer focusing on commercial and real estate litigation, including real estate transactions. He uniquely understands the connection between insurance and real estate. He is a brilliant legal strategist. I watched him in committee since day one that he arrived in the legislature, and he has really been a force to talk to because he understands the intricacies of insurance, and it's been a pleasure to work with him being in office a little more than 3 years. Welcome, Representative Fabrizio.
Thank you, Lisa. You're very kind. I'm very happy to be here.
Great. And also joining us is Florida Senator Nick DeSigley. He's a Republican from beautiful St. Pete. The senator is vice chair of the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee and chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. He's been in the legislature for many years and is currently the president and CEO of Hope Villages, one of Tampa Bay's leading nonprofit organizations doing great things for the residents and constituents of that area. Senator DeSigley, thank you so much for joining us here on the Florida Insurance Roundup.
Thanks, Lisa. Good morning. Great to be with you. Representative, great to see you too, my friend.
Perfect. So I've had the pleasure of knowing you both over several years, and I often joke when I'm in the Capitol that people either run toward me or they run the other way. And what I mean by that is that there are those that want to hear about what's going on in the insurance marketplace. As many of you know, I talk to realtors and insurance agents and contractors and insurance company leaders all over the state. And listening to what they're doing, I have the pleasure of relaying that in the halls of the Capitol. And the two of you have been awesome at running toward me and listening to what is going on in the marketplace. We work really hard to serve those that are in this market, with consumers being at the top of the spear. But I want our good audience to learn more about you before we dig into these issues. Representative Fabrizio, I want you to talk about why you got in the legislature, what you see from your constituents, because you're out of the South Florida area, which, you know, we laugh about Florida being two states, South Florida, North Florida, and and what it means to you to have a vibrant insurance market in your part of the world.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Yeah, absolutely. I ran for the Florida House back in 2020. There was a member in the House that, you know, we just didn't feel that individual represented myself, my family, and my community. So my wife motivated me, and by the way, it's her birthday today. She motivated me to go out there and run for office, and we did. I personally knocked on around 20,000 doors. My team knocked on about 50,000 doors, and we were able to flip that seat and come up to the Florida House. I came up to the Florida House because we wanted to have balanced, reasonable, conservative legislation in place to make sure that Florida remains great. Prior to that, I've been an attorney now for about 15 years. I had been practicing insurance defense for about 10 years. I did insurance coverage work, where we would analyze policies and determine whether there was coverage on commercial general liability policies. I did a heck of a lot on homeowners policies, both first party and third party. I did some regulatory work, but upon coming to the Florida House, I went off on my own. I started my own law firm, where my wife is my law partner, And we have been doing commercial litigation and real estate transactions since then. We have two little girls, Veronica, who's 11, and Alexandra, who's 9. And we have a beautiful little French bulldog, Albie. So, we love our community. We need to make sure that we have a balanced insurance market in the state of Florida so that consumers have good options and insurance carriers compete for our premium dollars. And I believe with that competition from the private markets, we'll have a great Florida to pass down to our children.
Thank you for that, Representative Fabrizio. I've often said you are a great American, just like our guest, Senator Sigley. So having said that, Senator Sigley, could you tell us about your journey? I mean, I know that you have been a small businessman and you know, have a family there, you do so much in the beautiful Pinellas and Pasco County areas. Tell us how your journey, where it's taken you and where it's going to take you.
Yeah, I'd love to. I appreciate that, Lisa. I grew up in Long Island, New York. I've lived in Pinellas County since 96. My wife and I live in the beautiful Indian Rocks Beach, which is in central Pinellas County. And I was in a family business for many, many years. I've been involved in our Pinellas County community for well over 15. Now I've got the great privilege and honor of being a president and CEO of one of the prominent nonprofits here in Pinellas County, where we serve over 150,000 people. So I have a very, I think, unique background, being that small business owner, dealing with commercial insurance, workman's comp, obviously living in a beach community, dealing with windstorm insurance, property insurance, auto insurance. I'm a great consumer of insurance products. But at the same time, I also understand how that impacts not only the consumer, but also, on the business end. And that brings a very unique perspective to the legislature. Very interesting things about the legislature is that not only do we represent every inch and every corner of our very, very large and diverse state, we're also bringing some perspectives to the mix where I believe that is one of the key ingredients of creating some really good, solid legislation because, all of us working together with these different and diverse backgrounds, I really think is key when we're trying to strike that balance in these reforms. And we know it's well documented over the last several years. Property insurance has been the number one issue for all of our constituents. And I think the legislature has gone a long, long way in trying to create a healthy, vibrant, competitive market. And so, I'm certainly excited for those reforms to continue to take shape and continue to, having a positive effect on the market. And it's truly an honor to serve in the Florida legislature on behalf of my constituents here in Pinellas County.
That is awesome, Senator Sigley. I know I took the time over the past few days to look at the closing debate March 6th, 7th, and 8th on both the House and the Senate floor. For those of our viewers that want to know how to do that, we will actually put that in our show notes. But it is so impressive to see you and Representative Fabrizio on your respective floors. Of course, Representative Fabrizio on the House in the House chamber and you in the Senate. Rising to support or rising to oppose certain public policy, and both of you have led the way in the insurance public policy that was debated and did pass this session. So, Representative Fabrizio, I want to start with the Citizens Property Insurance Bill, House Bill 1503. When that bill first came out, over 100 pages, big 100-page bills scare a lot of us. Tell us what your thoughts are about that. If you think it landed a good place, it did things like is going to allow specified second homes with very tight criteria to be assumed or, quote, taken out by surplus lines carriers. It, does several things to try to reduce the assessment potential. What's your perspective about that bill? Because I think every year we're probably going to have a citizens bill just to continue to try to get a handle around that that big overgrown organization, much to their chagrin. Representative Fabrizio?
No, thank you. Yeah, look, so that bill in particular, I was looking at that bill and the elements that ultimately made it into the bill package from prior to session during the committee weeks and prior to that. And what I'll tell you is that's really a tale of two bills. The main part of that bill, which I think is the most important part, really has to do with some of the fixes that we put in for citizens that they needed. Some administrative fixes to so that we make sure that they don't go insolvent and that they have all of the administrative tools that they need to operate our insurance carrier of last resort, what I like to consider it a safety net carrier. So that's part one of the bill. Part two of the bill really has to do with the takeout by surplus lines market. And originally when I saw that concept, and I've talked about surplus lines quite a bit, even back when Senator DeSigley was the chair of insurance and banking in the Florida House, I think surplus lines as carriers are very important to the state of Florida because it gives options to insureds who don't necessarily need or want to be in the admitted market for whatever reason. It allows other free market competition elements into the market. So I think surplus lines is important. I do have a little bit of a concern when you have a surplus lines carrier taking out an HO3 or a DP1, DP2, DP3 policy for an insured who may not be necessarily sophisticated enough to really understand what's going on. And I spoke to several of the surplus lines carriers, and there wasn't a lot of necessarily interest in those takeouts, but I see the need for having that available. So ultimately, where that landed, I think it's not a bad place. I think it's a fine place. And I think it's a fine place because ultimately, with citizens having a population of over, I think, 1.2, close to 1.3 million policies, we need to depopulate citizens. We need to bring citizens down to a number under a million policies where citizens will be truly our carrier of last resort for folks who are unable to obtain other policies whatsoever. I think there's probably a lot of good risk in citizens right now that other members of the admitted market may want to consider taking out. And I think that would probably be more in line with what those insureds are accustomed to. However, I do believe that we need to work at depopulating, and this is something that could help alleviate that. So ultimately, I think it's a good bill where it landed. I think the right safeguards are in place. I had some conversations with the governor's office about this bill, and I think ultimately it's a good bill, and I'm happy that I supported it.
Thank you for that great overview. And I also know that some of the surplus lines and admitted, and we can do a whole tutorial about the difference between the two for our listeners that don't know. I think we have to work in tandem together to keep the number one focus, which is to shrink the size of citizens, which is a peril, a danger to all of us. Turning it over to you, Senator Sigley, you championed one of the state CFO Petronas's bills that had a lot of provisions in it that I know were very important to the Department of Financial Services and consumer protection and the functioning of the marketplace. What was your perspective about that particular bill and its passage?
Yeah, great question. I mean, you know, anytime you can work with the CFO's office, he has always been focused on the consumer, on protecting the consumer. And so, you know, we covered the gamut when it comes to making sure that, and again, we're a growing state, so the consumer is becoming more and more important. Things are becoming a little bit more complex when it comes to some of these things. But I can tell you, one of my top priorities this year was the My Safe Florida Condominium pilot program, working very closely with the CFO's office on that as well. And there's going to be about approximately $30 million appropriation for that. It's a very well-documented program. Anytime that we can mitigate, losses, I think in the state is going to go a long way in contributing to that healthy insurance market. And we talk so much about property insurance for, you know, single family homes. In my district alone, we have thousands of condominium associations in my district alone. And those folks are looking for relief as well. Obviously, you know, we've had some condominium reforms that is requiring them to put more money in the reserves so that they're making the necessary repairs and upkeep of the condominiums. We don't want to see what happened at Surfside ever again in the state. And then on the flip side, they're also experiencing, you know, the very same increases in insurance for them as well. So they're getting hit on both sides. So for us to be able to come in with a pilot program, because the condominium world is very complex when it comes to mitigating losses, because obviously the structures are much larger. The cost associated with the upgrades of windows and doors and roofs, et cetera, is much, much larger. So we wanted to kind of test the waters first to see what that's going to look like. And then obviously in the future, I'm certainly going to be making some legislative decisions as to what that program might look like in the future. And so, you know, I think this session is very unique where we had that special session or right after the 2022 election, where we had significant property insurance reform. We had tort reform in the 2023 legislative session. I think this session, we were really identifying some areas that were around those reforms to make sure that they're going to complement the bigger decisions that we made in years past. And, you know, I think that anybody who's familiar with this space knows that, you know, every legislative session we can identify ways where we can complement the reforms that we did while allowing those reforms to take place, allowing the market to respond to that. I think that kudos to, you know, Representative Fabrizio. He has been an incredible champion in this space, really going back to his first legislative session where him and I worked very closely in the House in the Insurance and Banking Subcommittee. He's been an incredible advocate for not only his constituents back home, but really all 22 million Floridians right in the middle of a property insurance crisis. He's been a huge asset to, I think, what the legislature has been trying to do in stabilizing the market. And then ultimately, as we stabilize the market, you know, that's going to impact rates. That's going to be the number one, I believe, number one election issue this summer, as many of my colleagues hit the campaign trail. Folks are going to want to know what we're going to continue to do in this space. And we had a good legislative session, and I think that we're going to continue making these necessary changes to get this market into a place where our constituents are not being hit so hard in the pocket. We're dealing with inflation in general. When you throw in these other dynamics, it's almost a perfect storm. I'm very proud of what we've done in the legislature to act accordingly, act as quickly as we can, considering the enormity of these type of reforms. So I would anticipate that to continue in the years to come.
Excellent, Senator Sigley. And I, you know, we've talked about the reasons for these rate increases. Typically, they come in five separate buckets. You know, first of all, we build as a state on barrier islands. We are seeing more construction where it shouldn't be, in my humble opinion, than ever before. Second is the cost of inflation. No, look no further, you know, than a cost of a piece of plywood 3 years ago as compared today, something like $20. $18 3 years ago, it's probably $40 today. The cost of reinsurance, and we've talked about that before on this show, and I'll talk to Tom, Representative Fabrizio, about that in a minute. And the other two reasons, of course, are litigation and, you know, the weather. I mean, there's nothing we can do about Mother Nature. They're already talking about Category 6 hurricanes. All those reasons are leading to our rate increases. I know, Representative Fabrizio, you talk to reinsurers. Now, you have relationships with them. We have four major reinsurance markets in the world: Bermuda, London, Germany, and Switzerland. If I may, those four regions probably write 95% of all reinsurance, which is insurance for insurance companies. And if you were sitting in front of a reinsurer today, what would you tell them about the great reforms, you know, and how it's really helping consumers ultimately, though some say it didn't, but ultimately with the litigation reforms that you led to stop some of the billboard lawyers, as the governor called them? You know, one took effect, Senate Bill 2A took effect in December of 2022. The AOB reform, assignment of benefits prohibition, took effect in January of 23. Talk to us about how those have baked into the market, if you will, Representative Fabrizio.
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, the reinsurance element is something that is important. And it's been difficult for us to specifically address from the Florida legislature's perspective. And part of the reason is that we don't want to tinker with the market too much. We want to have an organic market that will support Floridians and will support this will support the Florida insurance market and will permit for an organic competition and growth into the future. That being said, like you mentioned, going back to 2022, Senate Bill 2A, then Senate Bill 2D, then House Bill 799, then 837, which was a big tort reform bill that I was lucky enough to be part of, and then 7052, which had some of the OIR regulatory elements in it. That set of legislation from 22 through 23, and perhaps some of the things that we did this year, really are a watershed for the Florida insurance market and for Florida altogether going forward. That being said, it takes time for those elements to take effect. It took us a long time to get to the place where we were at, where we had, 8% of the claims in the country, yet 80% of all the first-party litigation in the country. It took us a while to get that terrible situation, but it's going to take a little longer for us to get to where we're at. However, we've been seeing some very good positive effects of the legislation. We've gone from a place where we had, I think, 14 to 15 carriers either go insolvent or leave the state of Florida, to this last year, we've seen approximately 7 carriers come into the state of Florida because they see the changes that we've made, that we are looking to bring in foreign capital into the state of Florida to ameliorate our risk, to make sure that we're not wholly reliant on our insurer of last resort. And I think I'm hopeful that the reinsurance carriers see that there was benefit for them helping us fill our towers of reinsurance last hurricane cycle, and then coming forward this year, we're hoping that their appetite and their pricing will be commensurate with the reduced risk that we've brought into Florida by balancing the markets.
I've often heard, and I've been doing this for 30 plus years, that when reinsurers have certainty, they, for lack of a better expression, are comfortable with a public policy or the trend in a market, it affects the way they think about pricing. And I think it's just that simple. I mean, I've had conversations with them as well, and it's with all of us how we spend our money. If we're comfortable with the transaction, we're more inclined to either devote money to that transaction or, manage that transaction as best we can. Moving it over to you, Senator Sigley, and thank you for that great discussion, Representative Fabrizio. I was researching this weekend, going back to the condominium market. I saw the Condominium Association bill that passed this session, which I think has been 4 or 5 years in the making, where it's going to bring criminal penalties to condo board members that misbehave, that misuse funds, that kind of thing. It's a very detailed bill. We could probably do an entire session with Senator Bradley on that bill. But, I saw where there were 4,000 or 5,000 condos on the market in South Florida, 5 times what it was last year. I saw where there were 35 condominium associations that want to convert, or actually the whole association, big commercial buildings are being sold to developers to convert them to whatever they want to convert them to. What's going on in the central part of the state? And you've got thousands of them. Your phone's ringing off the hook. I know it has to do with insurance, et cetera. We're hoping those prices will level off. But are you seeing people? I mean, the banks should be concerned about those walking away from their condos. What are you seeing, Senator Sigley, in the central part of the state? We can read all about it in South Florida. I haven't seen much in your Pinellas County area.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think that my mother-in-law, for example, lives in a 55 and older condo association. She was a former member of the board, so she's kind of in the middle of all of the chatter that's going on there. And it's a fairly large condominium association. You've got many folks who are forced to make a decision whether or not they can afford to live in these condominiums that they've been in for, in many cases, 15, 20 years, because of the increased costs that are associated, with living in the state of Florida. I mean, let's there's no sense in sugarcoating that. Many of these folks are retirees, they're on fixed incomes, and they're having a really, really difficult time, making these assessments that they're getting. It's translating into higher monthly costs for them. And they are very concerned whether or not they can afford to live in these condominiums. So anytime we're in that situation, certainly the banks, and rightfully so, should be concerned about potential foreclosures and things like that. It's really that perfect storm, that I mentioned earlier. Everything seemed to happen all at one time. We know all of the obvious reasons why property insurance is the way it is. And it takes a while for these reforms to you'd have an impact on the market. And, you know, Lisa, you mentioned the talk of the Category 6 hurricanes. You know, I know it's early. You know, we've got a few months before the start of hurricane season, but it seems like the experts are once again predicting a very active Atlantic hurricane season. And so, you know, that is not something that that the state of Florida can afford. At the same time, you know, it's a reality that we certainly have to live with and deal with. But it is becoming very difficult, I think, for many of these retirees to have the ability to stay in these condominiums. And then the question is, where do they go from there? It's not like housing, you know, isn't an issue, whether you're in a condominium, whether you're looking for a single family home. You know, the increases over the last several years have been significant, and it's more expensive to borrow money these days due to, you know, the higher interest rates. So, you know, Floridians are in having some difficult time. There's some serious challenges out there, and like I mentioned earlier, it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, the feedback that many of us are going to be hearing on the campaign trail. And how that translates to what we're going to do in the next legislative session. We're going to have, you know, several new legislators coming in to the legislature next session. They're going to be bringing that feedback with them. And I think it's going to be certainly at a fever pitch, because, you know, anytime people are getting challenged and hit in the pocketbooks, they turn to their elected officials and folks running for office for answers, and rightfully so. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how all that plays out.
Well, I know that both of you have your work cut out for you this summer, and as I think about the bills that passed, you know, we had the Department of Financial Services bill that you carried, Senator Sigley, the pilot program for condos for folks to help them get their structures hardened and more resilient to the wind. On that point with the My Safe Florida Home, I was the director of that program back in 2005. And what I loved about the program is it gave us the ability to have the conversation. You know, we as homeowners in Florida, condo owners, have to take responsibility for our own structures. We know when our roofs are bad. We know when our windows are going to be crashed in if there's a Category 6 storm. So at least it keeps the conversation going. We may not get every single home and condo hardened in the next 10 years or 20 years, but at least we keep it top of mind. So keep preaching the good thoughts about it. And we had a couple of other bills, you know, the Office of Insurance Regulations bill that tightened some of the regulations around certain types of companies called reciprocals. And, you know, but you're right. Both of you are correct in that this session was kind of a session of you know, just doing some things that augmented some of the huge changes that we made for consumers ultimately with the litigation reform. And I know that these storms this season, and I know we're going to have them, some of those nefarious claims, silly things that the governor talked about whenever he was championing some of the litigation reform probably won't happen because of the great work that the two of you have done. I want to bring this in for a landing and talk about one important topic that I know both of you are very passionate about, and that is the ability to work across the aisle. You know, all too often when I'm watching the floor debate or in committee, I see the two of you being very deferent and kind to those in the minority party and the Democrats. And, you know, as one legislator said to me, people think that we are on, you know, both either side of the aisle, but there's a surprisingly amount of bipartisanship that happens in the legislature. And I want to end on that very positive note, because I have friends that are Democrats and Republicans. I respect both of them tremendously. The fact that you run for office, thank you, thank you, thank you for doing that, because most of our audience don't know that it's a $23,000 a year job. And it's so I just want to thank you for being in those offices. But Representative Fabrizio, talk about your reach across the aisle and how you embrace sometimes what may be an opposing view and how you manage that beautifully, as I have seen.
Well, one thing I'll tell you is, so, you know, I speak to a lot of reporters, and sometimes walking out of the chamber, we get a news camera in our face and a reporter will say, you know, why are you guys passing, you know, all these bills and you're ignoring all the Democrats? And I appreciate you bringing this up, because that rhetoric is that we don't work across the aisle is totally false. I would say that approximately, and this I'm ballparking the number, but approximately 90% of the legislation that's passed in the House, and I suspect in the Senate as well, is bipartisan for the most part. While there are disagreements within those 90%, they're not always necessarily partisan disagreements. They're just disagreements over policy, as we should have in the legislature, where we're working together to figure out what's the best policy for Florida. So by and large, I would say that Republicans and Democrats do get along on most issues, but there are 5% of the issues where we are philosophically opposed, but we do work together to arrive at the right place. And we do often. I'll tell you, for the prior 3 years, I worked on legislation to get telehealth to be the law in Florida so that Floridians can permanently, going forward, use telehealth for purposes of having consultations with their physicians from their homes or their places of work. That was bipartisan legislation. I had support on both sides of the aisle for that bill. This year, I had a bill where we closed a loophole on obtaining DNA evidence from prisoners in the state prison system. That was a bipartisan bill. Members on both sides of the aisles agreed that we should be able to close cold cases, and we should be able to have DNA from each and every single prisoner in the state of Florida, because that can also be used to exonerate them as well. So we work together, we find common ground, and I think we have a great legislature in the state of Florida, and I think we're able to get good policy done for those reasons.
I'm not surprised at all. You know, when I watch the debate, it's never personal. Senator Sigley, you are a master. I've seen you go back and forth on the Senate floor. The Democrats are challenging you, questioning you. You're very patient. How do you keep a composure? How do you do and be so gracious, because you are so gracious and a critical thinker? How do you manage that? You know, I always hear, don't make it personal. What's your secret?
Well, look, I think it's about relationships. The Senate, we're 40 members. And so, we have an opportunity. We spend a lot of time together in committee, on the floor. And so, building relationships with not only, the members of the Republican caucus, which we spend a lot more time together, but, you build relationships with my Democratic colleagues. We talk about family. We talk about what we do in our professional lives. We're building these relationships. So when the lights go on and Senator Pizzo, who has been my, you could say my counterpart in a lot of these very heated and passionate debates, we understand each other. And so I love debating him. It probably looks like we're getting aggressive, but at the end of the day, Thursday afternoon on vacation rentals, we debated for, questions for probably over an hour. And then when it was all said and done, he comes over and he gives me a kiss on my bald head. And so, I get up and I smack him in the back of his head. But at the end of the day, we have a level of respect for each other because we're doing what we think is right. We certainly have different opinions on what certain policy should be, what it should look like. But at the end of the day, we respect each other. We have a rapport and a friendship that the media is not going to really report on, because that doesn't get them clicks. It's not sexy for them. The representative is right. 90-95% of what we do is bipartisan, where we come together. We get their input. Many times you'll see amendments based on that input, because it was, especially for me, I go out of my way to make sure that the legislation I'm working on and I get it right. I want to know what those potential unintended consequences are. And the only way to do that is to get the feedback, not only from Republicans, but you have to get that from Democrats as well. We're all duly elected. We all represent the same number of people. And I think that's really what makes this legislature work so well, is that we have these relationships. We work behind the scenes with each other. I think what we see out of Washington, D.C. is completely different. I think they're not only the combative when the cameras are on, I don't think they're very good friends when the cameras go off, unfortunately. But, we have a requirement to balance our budget. We have a requirement to come in here and pass legislation within a 60-day window. It's very hard to do that having that bipartisanship. And I think it's something that that works really well, and so I'm certainly proud to be part of it.
Thank you for saying that. And, that there embodies the spirit, the tenacity and the commitment of these two great legislators who, as I said, have a salary of $23,000 a year to serve 21 million people. So with that, I thank you, and I am grateful to both of you for being on here. Representative Fabrizio, on his bride's birthday, it's been a pleasure having you.
Lisa, thank you so much.
And Senator Sigley, you know, hailing from gorgeous St. Pete, I'm sure the waters are gleaming and it's a sunny day. Thank you for being on the show.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be with you all.
You know, I do believe that our podcast show notes are second to none. We try to think so you don't have to. We will put all kinds of wonderful bill analysis and synopsis of the four or five bills that did pass, highlighting the My Safe Florida Home, the Department of Financial Services bill, and some of the changes that are made. We did a great newsletter that was our legislative wrap-up. That's been released. You can find that on our website. We'll put all that in the show notes. And if you work in the insurance industry or you're an insurance consumer listening or just, you know, a claims adjuster or any of it, we'd love to get your perspective on these issues. We at our firm cannot do our jobs without you doing yours. And so it's a privilege to stand beside you and work with you and listen to you. You know, I was listening to Representative Fabrizio talk about the telehealth piece, and one of you called my office and said, I can't do telehealth because I'm at my other home in Ohio or wherever they were, and they said I have to be standing on Florida soil. So I'll talk about that with you, Representative Fabrizio, in terms of telehealth for next session. But, you know, just listening out in the field, finding out what's going on helps us help great members like Representative Fabrizio and Senator Sigley. So call us and leave us your comments. You can do that on air on the Florida Insurance Roundup by calling 850-388-8002. That's 850-388-8002. And drop me an email, lisamiller@lisamillerassociates.com. You can follow us. We're all over social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, X. You know, we try as much as we can to reach out to our folks in the field. Like us, follow us, all that great stuff that the younger generation does. I'm not quite as good at it as I'd like to be, but share us with your colleagues and let them know that we are here for them. I appreciate all of you listening. I appreciate our guests today. And just remember that we've got a passion for policy and our client's success, and we do it all with you in mind. Until next time, stay safe.
This has been Lisa Miller & Associates Florida Insurance Roundup, your podcast on the people, issues, and regulations shaping Florida's insurance market. For more information on today's program, please visit us on the web at www.lisamillerassociates.com.